Welcome to the Distance to Empty podcast, the podcast where we dive into the world of 200-plus mile ultramarathons, multi-day efforts, FKT attempts, basically anything that has you running multiple days at a time, around the clock, on trails, on roads, up and over mountains, stuff like that. I am your host, Kevin Goldberg, and I'm here with my co-host, Peter Noyes. Peter, how goes it?
Doing well, Kevin. As you all know, I'm doing biking only right now, but had a nice milestone. My watch is telling me I'm productive doing just biking, so that's a good sign.
Nice. That's a good swing you took there. And you got an Everest attempt coming up at the end of April, so about 2 months out from that, and then you'll switch over and see if the body can handle the running again. Is that still the plan?
That's the plan.
Cool. I think it's going to happen for you. I'm excited myself for kind of where we're at in training, sort of rapidly approaching 200 season here. And I feel like right now I'm in like the boring, but super important, like just consistent overall high volume training stage. So about 10 weeks till Cocodona, which is crazy when you say it out loud, 10, 11 weeks. Yeah, we got 200s rapidly approaching. The speed project is coming up at the end of March, which is like an unofficial run from LA to Vegas. We'll certainly have some people on to talk about that. That's, I think, 340 miles, kind of a choose your own adventure, make your own rules sort of race, as long as you get from one place to the other on your feet. So yeah, good stuff.
Exciting. So what do we got going today, Kevin?
Man, I'm super excited for our guest today. Our guest today is an incredibly accomplished ultra endurance athlete. She has run over 110 marathons, over 25 full Ironmans. She's a professional triathlete, has done and won several ultra triathlons. She has run at the 2020 Olympic trials for the marathon. She's done about a dozen ultra marathons. Most recently, she ran the Jackpot 100 in just over 14 hours, like 14 hours and a few minutes. Super quick. She has the course record and is a two-time winner at the Badwater 135. Now, one thing that's missing from all these accolades is a 200-plus mile event. So this guest has not yet run a 200, so we're super excited to welcome her to the world of 200-plus mile races. Ashley Paulson is lining up at the Cocodona 250 this year for her first 250-mile race, and I am super stoked to introduce her to our 200 community and hear all about her journey to Cocodona and how that's going to go. So let's get to it. Ashley, welcome to Distance to Empty. Thanks for being here.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you guys today.
Yeah, we're stoked to chat about kind of someone, you know, who's new to the 200 space and is, you know, awaiting their first start line. So it's going to be a fun one. Can you, I guess, just kind of introduce yourself to our listeners and give us kind of a elevator pitch background of like who you are, how you came to endurance sports, and how you find yourself knocking on Cocodona 250's door?
Oh, man. Okay, brief. That's hard.
It doesn't have to be brief.
No, I've been in the fitness industry for over 20 years now, and I really feel like my background of like teaching classes, like, you know, three or four classes a day, sometimes five or six, really helped me tap into the endurance world. And I've always been a runner. I did my first marathon at 19. I just fell in love, and I've been doing them ever since. And so along with fitness, teaching fitness classes, always been running. And then I kind of started getting injured because, you know, that's what we do as runners. We just pound ourselves to the ground. And so 2008, I found myself in a swimming pool because that's about all I could do. And I decided to try the triathlon world and really started to dive into that more so in 2010, did my first Ironman distance. And I was still teaching at the time. I had no like expectations of like making it big out there, just wanted to do it because it just was so much fun to be out there, the energy. And I did not fall in love with the short distance. It was the Ironman distance. I loved the long course. I felt like that's where I just could I could be a part of it and like be cheering for people, but still be racing. And a sprint was just too short and hurt a little bit differently. And so I actually was able to earn my pro card back in 2015 for Ironman distance or for triathlon, and still teaching classes and everything like that along with it, because that was just part of my passion. And going back into COVID era, there was some Ironmans canceled. I was trained for an Ironman, like really wanting to go do well at it, and they canceled the Ironmans. And that's actually when I found my first ultra run, because ultra running, or the long courses, they didn't have as many people, and so they were still able to do these races. So I was like, oh my gosh, the Bear 100 is in like 10 days. I wonder if they'd let me in. I've got fitness. I've never done that distance, but fitness can translate over, and I love trails. That's definitely not what I was trained for, but the mind is a powerful thing. And so I decided to jump in and be like, let's see what I can do. And I knew one day I was going to do like the 100-mile distance. I just didn't expect it to be that soon, because my focus was triathlon and the long course in triathlon. I had done a double Ironman. That was the longest thing I had done at that point. So that was a 4.8-mile swim, a 224-mile bike, and then a 52-mile run. And so I'm like, hey, I'm familiar with lack of sleep, you know, so let's see how I do. And I loved it. It was so much fun. And so I was glad that it kind of lined up that way. I haven't done very many 100 milers since then, because I still like to do it all. But, you know, I'm moving on to I just finished my 6th 100 miles. So, you know, I feel like this is just the beginning. I'm really excited to see what I can do moving forward, doing both, because I still would love to do triathlon as well.
Yeah, I came from a similar background, actually. So I've done a number of Ironman races as well. And I made that jump in 2016. So I'm curious.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm curious now that you've seen the other side, the ultra running space is like I know why I made this switch. Like I got kind of tired of just staring at a power meter, you know, for 5 hours and not even seeing where I am, really, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, like, now that you've been doing the ultra running, What are the differences? Like, how much do you now gravitate toward one versus the other?
I feel like I've been gravitating more so towards the ultra for a few reasons. I love the bike. So like that is I will still incorporate swimming and biking in all of my training. But the gravitating towards more the ultras has actually been because of the swim. I haven't been able to swim very, very much. And so I'm like, I can run. And so I can actually compete in this area right now. I'm not going to stop doing Ironman. I would definitely would love to jump into an Ironman or two this year. We'll see if that happens. I don't have anything on the schedule yet. But I think having the variety of triathlon, of trail, of road keeps me excited. And I feel that's one of the reasons I do better for myself, because I'm not burning myself out with just one thing. I'm excited about all of it, and I still do all of it. Yeah, if I focus a little bit more on one, would I get a little bit better? Maybe, who knows? But I'm having fun, and that to me is more important than like being number one. And so I definitely will continue to do both.
Great. Yeah, I still bike as well. What I've found personally is I just can't get the same run volume as other people, but I can build up a lot of fitness on the bike, even though I'm 100% focused on ultra.
Yes. I feel like it has helped me so much in the ultra with my running. So I like to incorporate that with my athletes as much as I can with cycling, throwing it in there. They're like, Ash, I don't want to be a triathlete. I'm like, I promise you, I'm not trying to make you become a triathlete. I'm helping you build that fitness without the risk of injury so much. So I love that you do that as well, Peter.
I don't. I've tried, you know, it's funny. You mentioned like, you know, a little bit of a shift in 2020. In 2020, I put in like, well over 2,000 miles on my bike, which was like 2,000 miles more than I ever had in a year. But there was more time on my hands, and I just kind of like enjoyed being outside for like mental health and stuff. And I was all stoked and set to keep that up. And then it just kind of slowly trickled off, but perhaps I'll get back to it. I do always like when I like, even if I just hop on Swift with friends, it's always fun.
Yeah, for sure. switches things up. So. Yeah.
So you jumped into the, it's funny that you jumped into the Bear 200, like, you know, 10 days, 2 weeks, whatever beforehand. Cause that is not
an 100.
Oh, that's 20. What I meant. There is no Bear 200. Oh, I'm just, okay. I'm so, there should be, that'd be great. I just, with this, Distance to Empty podcast, all we do is talk about 200. So I'm like programmed to,
I see, yeah. I see.
Jumped into the Bear 100. That's not an easy first 100.
No, but I was living there in Logan at the time. And so actually, no, I wasn't, but I was going up to Logan a lot because that's where my job is. That's where iFit is.
Okay.
And so I was up in that area a lot and I jumped on that trail a lot. So I was like, I might as well go back up there and jump on those trails. And I love vert. So a lot of my vert was done actually on a treadmill coaching classes for iFit. So I hadn't been on the trail for probably 4 or 5 months before that race. So it was, I didn't know how I was going to respond. I just knew that my body was trained for hills, just didn't know how they were trained for real hills.
So you started with the Bear, which was a very difficult 100, and pretty quickly progressed to another very difficult 100 plus mile race. So before we get into kind of how you found Cocodona and what your expectations are of that race, let's chat about Badwater and the last, did you run it the last 2 years, 22 and 23?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. So what led to, like, why was Badwater kind of the, like, pie in the sky race for a little while for you? And just walk us through, like, the journey to Badwater and then the decision to go back and kind of shatter your own PR at that race just a year later.
Yeah. So Badwater is actually one of the very first races that I'd heard about for ultra running, like, you know, 15 years ago now. And that one always sparked my interest because I've always been a heat girl and I've lived in Southern Utah and people will, like, they just know me as the girl that runs like in the middle of the day. And back then I didn't have pink hair, but they'd be like, that blonde girl's out running like at 2 PM, you know, it's 115. And so my sister actually told me about this race and she's like, you would be so good at it. Like, it's so hot. You have to run on the white line. And it sounded so amazing. In fact, that was my goal, was to have that one be my very first 100. But little did I know at the time when I made that goal that you can't do Badwater as your very first. And so, that one has always, you know, the past 15 years been on my mind that I will be doing that one because I love the heat. I love the road. And so when I was finally able to do it, I did my first 100, I was like, okay, now I could sign up for Badwater. And then I found out you needed 3 100s. I was like, wait a second, they tricked me. And so now it's actually 4 100s to even apply for Badwater. So I was really excited to get into Badwater in 2022 because I had only done 3 100s. And he's kind of, the race director likes you to do his 100s or his certain ones. And so I didn't think I'd get in, but when he called my name, I was really, really excited. And I absolutely loved the course. I loved the heat. I loved the push. I loved the energy. And so when I went back the next year, it really had nothing to do with going to try to break my record. I won't lie. I was hoping to do a little bit, but I wanted to break that 24 hour mark because I was so close, but a lot can happen, as you know, in 100, 200. So I was blown away when I was able to break that record by a few hours or like 2.5 or whatever. So I just kept chipping away a little bit more. And my husband actually went quiet the last half on where I was on my goal because he's like, you're doing great. Let's just see where you fall. And I ended up being able to break my own course record on that and had an even better day than the year before. So, but I loved it. Like the heat was, I tick with the heat. And so, the cold, yeah, you don't want to see me on a cold day. I'll shut down.
Well, Cocodona is a sneaky warm race. So if you like the heat, that's a one up on Cocodona.
Exactly. One of the reasons I chose that race. So I'm excited to see how that one does.
It did get down, it was the first year I did it. In 22, I think it was 17 degrees in Walnut Canyon in Flagstaff.
Oh, you said it dropped. I thought it was because you said the heat.
No, the heat on day one, like I think it was what Peter was referring to, is crazy. It's like mid-90s. It'll be right up your alley. But like that's the cool thing about it, is it like traverses so many different ecosystems that like on day one, it could be 95, and on day three, it could be, you know, in the teens, 20s, which I don't think it happens often. Like last year, it wasn't that cold, but it definitely is a huge swing from day one to the end of the race.
True, because you're getting so high.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited to see how all that, how my body handles all of that.
So Cocodona 250, when did you hear about it? What, you know, when did you decide to make the jump to something, you know, let's say 135 to 250? And like, why Cocodona versus some of the other 200s that are in the country or in the world?
So I heard about Cocodona. Gosh, I've heard about it for the past few years, but I was kind of on the same spectrum. Like, I'm not going to do a 200 for a while. I'll stick with Ironman and hundreds now. But then like last year, I actually was considering doing Cocodona 250 before Badwater. And I was like, hey, that's probably stupid, but why is it in my head? And once it gets in my head, I just cannot shut off my brain. It's just, it's there. So I'm like, okay, maybe not this year, but next year. I love the location. I love Arizona. I love that it's not super far from my house, that it's easier to bring my crew. So that had its own little element. Like that was appealing to me, is having it a little closer, that not everyone had to just fly out there. And the heat and all of the climbing, the fact that it's not super technical. I hear there's some areas that get a little technical, but it's pretty runnable course that I felt like that'll play in my favor along with the heat. And the fact that I wasn't going to do Badwater this year was a big, that was my, the timing of it is perfect. My daughter's having a baby the end of June, so I wanted to have my big stuff done before then so I could really focus on her and be home with her in July and August, and be able to snuggle my grandbaby. So the timing of it, there's so many things about it that it like fell into place perfectly. So I'm scared though, guys. I'm really scared, but that's what makes me excited about it.
Well, first of all, congratulations on the new baby on the way. That's exciting.
Thank you. We're excited. I'm going to be a grandma. I'm going to start putting grays in my this pink.
So we've heard that you do a lot of your training on the treadmill. Is that something that you plan to keep up for Cocodona? And just wondering, how are you going to use that as a tool the same or differently than you have for, say, Badwater or any of these other races?
I will probably do more the same. I mean, my treadmill, I love that it can go up to 40% and I get some solid climbing. I can control the heat in there. I can have a lot of food available. There's just so many things about the treadmill that I love that people cannot stand with a treadmill. I love it. I don't work for a treadmill company because it's just like a job. I absolutely love what the treadmill offers, and being able to do speed work on their hills, long 5 hours. And I'm fine with 5 hours. It does not bother me. And so having that variety, I will definitely be using a lot of treadmill once again, just like I did Badwater and all of my other training. So I think it'll help me a lot with all the vert we're going to be going through this May.
Yeah. I think I have the same or a similar treadmill. I have the X22i. It goes up to 40%. Oh, yeah. And I definitely, it's a huge tool for me too. I use the climbing a lot. And it's, you know, I often don't see why it gets so much hate. Like, I think it's, you know, like anything else, it's a fun tool that we can use to like train really well for these things. And like, I can get in big efforts midweek when I maybe can't get to trails. And like, you know, it's just a tool. And I like it.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I love to hear that. I don't hear that very often from anybody, Kevin. So yes. And that's actually my exact treadmill that I have, is the X22i.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm like, give me 40%. Give me, you know, let me climb. Let me run fast. Let me do it all and hold my food.
Yeah.
It matters.
Absolutely. It's a lot harder to hold your food for the first 37 miles of Cocodona than it is a treadmill workout.
Yes.
So, you know, you mentioned that you're scared, which is, I think that's like, that's how we all feel for our first 200. Like it's such, there's so many unknowns. There's so many, even the knowns are such variables. And like, there's just, everything is, you know, kind of condensed where like, you know, in a 5K fitness is 99.9% of it. In a 250, yeah, fitness is huge, but it's like, you know, maybe 25%. And then there's like all these other buckets of like, you know, variables. What, I guess, don't really know what I'm asking here, but what are like you most anxious about? What are you most like unsure, scared of? And then on the flip side, what are you most excited about? Like, what is like, what is keeping you up? Like in the excitement side of things, like that you can't wait to experience.
I think the lack of sleep is going to be, that scares me a little bit. Just because even with, I think the longest time I've been out has been like 32 hours, and this is going to double that. And when I got done with that 30, that was a double Ironman that I did. I did that with my husband last year. And so it was that, like, I crashed hard. Like my, I was out. Within like what we stopped and I'm like, I'm out. I'm like, how am I going to double that? And that like excites me and scares me because you put your mind to it though. Like, no, you're just not going to sleep or you're going to take those 5 minute naps. I've never had to stop and take naps during any of these distances that I've done so far. And so it excites me that I'm going to be in a completely new territory for me mentally, physically, and so I'm like, let's go, let's bring it on. Let's see how I respond. And, so I'm just trying to learn as much as I can from everybody about how they do it. Like, is it cat naps? Like 5 minutes? Is it 20 minutes? Is it an hour? And I won't know in for what's going to work for me until race day, you know? And so that's scary. It's, you can't go in and be like prepared for that. What's really going to work? I don't know.
Yeah. It's, and like, that's the biggest question I get is sleep. Like people always want to know what's the secret to sleep. And, you know, having done 9 of these, I can tell you that my sleep strategy and like situation has been pretty different for every single 200 I've done. Okay. I've done, and what I've learned is the best plan for me is to not really have a plan. And that doesn't necessarily mean I'm just winging it, but like, I'm very in tune to like, looking for signs of like what might mean I need sleep. Like, you know, is my 18 minute pace dropping to 22 minutes? Am I, you know, refusing to eat and not, you know, not wanting food? Am I stumbling, tripping? Those are signs I'm like scanning for to see if I need sleep. So I don't have like, I'm going to sleep at Mingus Mountain or I'm going to sleep here or there. It's more of like, when I need to sleep, you need to sleep, but not necessarily having like a strict plan. And for Cocodona, like in previous races, I've done more of like the short, like 5 to 10 minute naps more frequently. And my 2 years at Cocodona, and that works, but my 2 years at Cocodona has been more like, I think both years I only slept twice, maybe 3 times last year for like less than 2 hours total. So like 20 to 30 wow. minute naps, but it's, you know, there's no one has the answers is what I think I'm getting at. It's very, yeah. It's very unique.
Everyone's so unique. And that's why I'm like, I won't know until I'm there. And I like that idea of like not really having that plan, just like going off of, okay, no, you need it now. Now you're stumbling. Now at this point, it's going to help more so because you're now at a 22 minute pace, take 10 minutes, 30 minutes, because now then you'll be able to pick up your pace. So it'll be interesting to see how, what I need for that. So that keeps me excited.
Yeah. And for another perspective, I agree with Kevin. I think the best plan is like a loose plan. And I'm like 15 hours behind Kevin. So I'm out there for another night usually. And for me, I slept at Cocodona between 4 and 5 hours. I slept
okay.
four long 1 hour naps in a car. And then I think I only took 2 trail naps, mostly just because I was having a pity party and needed to try something. Yeah, pretty much. So, maybe switching to nutrition, hydration, you know, like back even to the Ironman, like for Ironman, I knew I need to drink 9 bottles of Gatorade Endurance. I need to have 6 gels, 1 Clif Bar and 1 something else. And I knew that was perfect and it just worked every time. But for Ultra, at least for me, it's radically different. So just wondering what it's been like for you to switch when it comes to nutrition and what you're thinking your approach will be for Cocodona.
Yeah. So, for the ultra runs, I was able to add in like solid foods and Ironman. I'm a liquid girl. So, it was nice to be able to actually have like bars and stuff like that during these longer runs. But Badwater, I couldn't have any solid. Both years, it was straight liquid because it was just so warm. Anytime I'd put anything in my mouth, I would just it would just sit there and I'd be like, bleh, nope, that's not happening. So it was all liquid. So I ended up bringing like protein drinks and, you know, I've been doing a lot with ketones the last year actually. And so that stuff has been really helpful, but I'm thinking with Cocodona, I'll be able to add more solids than I did in my bad water. So we'll, I'm going to kind of train with both, but be ready to have just solids, because that sometimes if it is really warm, that's all my body will respond to. And I need those calories. So as long as I'm getting my proteins, my fats, my carbs, and those ketones, my body responds pretty well, even if it is in liquid form.
Yeah, I think for me at Cocodona, I usually do more like more of that Ironman kind of fast, like nutrition style on day one, because it typically is hot and you're working harder with all the climbing. And then once like night one comes, that's when I shift into like real food and a combination. I use like liquid fuels, like an undercurrent fuel, usually have like a high carb mix in my bladder or something. And then, you know, but I think both years I've had like a whole pizza at Whiskey Row. They, you know, they're like full service diners out there. So they,
really?
They provide lots of real food options if you're able to stomach it.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually my stomach's pretty good with that stuff, as long as it's not super hot. Like it wasn't even the heat or the, my stomach that wasn't able to handle the solids. It was just, I couldn't chew it. Like there was not enough saliva. So I'm like, my husband brings Cheetos and all the things that he thinks that I'd want, because that's what I loved for my other 100s. But I was like, I can't, I just can't do it. So I have a feeling I'll be able to have more of that. Like you said, probably on night one, give me a whole pizza if I can handle that. Absolutely. But a lot of that will have to do with the heat, I'm sure.
Yeah, they have Freak Brothers pizza at the Whiskey Row aid station, and every runner gets a full pizza if they want one. So, yeah.
No way. And yeah. You down the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I eat a couple of slices in the aid station, and then I'll like take the rest to walk out. The section after Whiskey Row is like 5 miles of pavement through the neighborhood. So it's just like slightly uphill, and you can just power walk and eat pizza.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yeah. That sounds like a fun party.
It's not like a Domino's pizza. It's like an individual sized pizza that, you know, is more of a single serving.
I was like, dang.
Yeah.
It's probably like 800 to 1,000 calories for the whole thing, probably.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. For any time you can be hiking, I just want to be able to keep moving forward. I don't want to take a lot of time at the aid stations. I want to just like get in, grab my stuff, have one pack to hand over, and my husband will have the other pack ready for me, and just keep moving forward. Even if I'm eating, whatever, drinking, as long as there's forward progress made, I think for me, that's one of my goals for this. Because sitting too long that's hard. That just makes it hard on the body, but we'll see. We'll see. I might just sit and be like, never mind, I want 10 minutes. Give me 10 minutes.
It's really like, that's my goal every year, and I never hit it. Like I'm always in the aid station so much longer than I want to be. I'm usually pretty good for like the first 100K, maybe 100 miles, and then it's just all hell breaks loose, and you're like,
yeah,
you know, oh, these are really comfortable chairs. Oh, there's a bed.
Oh, that looks nice.
But it is, yeah. You can save a lot, like you said, because you don't need to be moving very fast. I mean, you could be shuffling along at a 25-minute mile if you're moving forward, and it's like a lot faster than 0 miles an hour.
Exactly.
And, you know, you look at the winning times for these races, they're in the high teens or the mid teens, you know, 15, 16-minute miles. So it's like, if you're moving, you're contributing to, you know, the positive side of things.
Exactly. And that's what I've done with all of my ultras so far. And like I said, I haven't done very many, is I just like, don't hang out in the aid stations. You know, I just move forward, eat while walking, drink while walking, tie my shoe, hop in a lot. No, I'm just kidding. I will.
So you mentioned like the crew switching your pack and, you know, being efficient in the aid stations. And what is your crew all set for Cocodona? What does your crew look like? Will you have pacers? Like how stoked are they? How nervous are they? Like what's that picture look like?
Yeah, I'll have my St. Badwater crew.
Cool.
So I'll have my sister, my two girls that live here in St. George, and then Maddie out crewing me for that one. Just they're fire. They're just my team, my core. So I would have been really sad if one of them couldn't make it. I guess I understand if they can't give up a whole week of their life, but they've all committed to it and they're really excited. They were actually really sad. So surprisingly, that I wasn't doing bad water this year, except for my husband. He was really grateful. He was like, I'm done. Give me a second. But yeah, so all the girls are really, really pumped to be out there and support me again. So was Matt, but just he was glad I wasn't doing bad water. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the style of crewing is different, right? Like bad water, you're crewing, they're crewing you like what, every 20, 30 minutes and driving along alongside of you, basically.
Yes. Yeah. And then, yeah, he did hear that this was so much different. He's like, oh, he's like, I can actually like sleep. I can actually like, you know, take a little time at certain areas. So it's a little less crazy.
Yeah. You'll have to warn him about Crown King though. If he's going to drive there, that's a bit of a long dirt road to get to. Totally doable.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, something to keep in mind.
Okay. Is our van going to make it?
Yeah, the van should make it. It's just long. It's like an hour each way, and the rest of the course is so accessible and so easy to crew. So it's like it's the outlier. It's the first aid station they can see you at. So,
oh, okay, and it's an hour. I'll write that down. Thank you.
Yeah, it's. I actually used Peter's crew there last year. I told my crew, I was like, "Don't go there. I'll be fine."
Oh, can you use somebody else's crew?
You can, yeah, sure. I mean, if you know someone else who's already going to be there, you could totally just like say, hey, here's what I need for this aid station and save your crew the trip. That's what I did.
Oh, that's really nice to know because, yeah, like it has to be your crew and you can't be, anyway, there's so many different rules.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely rules in the 200s too, but I'd say it's a lot more lax. Like as long as you're in an aid station, you can pretty much get help from anyone, support from anyone. You know, you can, I've gone into stores on course and like bought myself things because they're there. There's a great Maverick gas station leaving Whiskey Row. And I always go in and get like an energy drink. Yeah. It's a different style of racing for sure.
Yeah. See, it'll be fun. It'll be so much fun. I love it.
Yeah. Maybe backing up a little bit too. Like one question I wanted to ask earlier is, you know, you talk about, technical courses maybe not working to your advantage, but wasn't the Bear really technical? Like you had a great time there. So just wondering, like, what was that transition from triathlon to trail running, and how did you get up to speed quickly on technical trail running?
Well, I used to do a lot more trails. Like, gosh, because I lived in Pleasant Grove and Utah, and I would just walk out and I'd hit trails, like, and that was part of my training for triathlon. And so I was a little bit more like, you don't use it, you lose it. Like downhill, I have my guard up right now. And it's so embarrassing. I'm like, whoa, I used to be really good at this. And now I am tiptoeing. And so even back in 2020, I had been on trails a lot more than I have in the last few years. And so that, like the downhills, I can go uphill all day, but those downhills, I go slower than I do on the uphill. So I'm practicing. I've been getting out a little bit, and I recently had foot surgery. So then it pulled me back a little bit more on the downhills, because that's how I needed to like get a new tendon because of fall downhill. And so mentally it's like it's okay. Trust your feet. They're going to land. And so we're going to get back there.
Honestly, after day one, like, you know, on day one, I'm like, give me the downhills. I want them. But like after day one in a 200, they're the last thing I like, give me uphills all day. They're just, yes. They're so much easier on the body. Like everything starts to hurt more on the downhills. Like this race, Cocodona ending, that the downhill coming off of Eldon is so, it's not bad. Like if you were doing it fresh, it'd be great. But you know, it's like everyone is like, oh, the Eldon climb. And I'm like, excuse me, the Eldon descent is the problem.
I am with you on that, Kevin. Yeah. Like I haven't done that, but I'm always like, I want that uphill finish on these longer ones. Like give me an uphill and I'm just better at them. Like, yeah, I'm not so beat up. So that's definitely something I need to be working on for the next few months is those downhills on dirt. Not because I can smash it on the road, but on dirt, I'm like, ooh.
A few of them are really, like, I wouldn't go so far as to say, like, super technical, but there's just so many rocks at Cocodona, like big baseball-sized rocks, like, on trails, and it's just, like, it grinds on you. Like, it's, like, again, if you're fresh or we're doing a short section, it's not a big deal, but, like, you know, 150, 170 miles in, it's like, oh, my God, like, that's enough.
Yeah, like, I am so tired of trying to balance.
Yeah.
Just let me just move. Yeah. So that'll be interesting. And I think whether you're good at downhill or not, you're going to fill those those by mile 175, you know, you're gonna be like, oh, okay, I just am over this. So, but I definitely want to practice and get at least to where I used to be. I don't have as much access to trails or trails. I guess I do, just not the trails that, like, I love the mountainy trails. In St. George, I have to really travel to, you know, 45 minute drive or something, which it just is one more thing to do with kids and stuff. It's hard to get out with that. Roads just right there always, or treadmills right there. So.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right. The Cocodona is for the most part runnable. I think the really tough sections downhill are very short, and like the we've talked about this section over and over again, but coming off of Mingus down to Jerome, that's the worst, but that's just hard to run down.
Is it?
It's so steep and it's so technical that.
Yeah, it's the absolute worst section of the course.
What mile is that?
Mental note. 110 to 125.
Whoa, okay, good 15 miles.
Yeah.
Well, it's really bad for like two or three where it's steep, and then the rest is just a really rocky fire road that's just really annoying for like 12 or 13 miles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it is like, you know, every, like, both years I've run Cocodona, I'm just blown away by how runnable the course is. And like, if you have legs, how much you can run, you know, that's the thing, is like a lot of people after that first day, it's so hard to like find a rhythm where you're really like ticking off miles at a kind of a runnable cadence for long. But if you can, that's where success is found at Cocodona, or I should say that's where, you know, you can really put time in at Cocodona.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping. I could just find that rhythm. And see what this body could do for 250 miles. Whew.
How do you like find yourself? Because I'm curious. Because I obviously like I have my way that I do it, and I've heard other people have their different ways. Like, how do you break it down? Like, I assume you're not saying, "All right, I'll see you in 250 miles." Like, what is your? Is it aid station? Aid station? Is it by day, by mile? Like, what is your like mental game look like for breaking things into more bite-sized pieces?
I'm an aid station girl. So it's just like, hey, how many miles to the next aid station? Okay, this run is X amount of miles. And, you know, I'm like, I do that all the time. It doesn't matter how tired I am. I've done that sore. I've done that. And so it's an aid station to aid station. Who knows, with something like this, it might be mile by mile. Okay, I can make it one more mile, right? But hoping to stick with the aid station thing, that's how it worked for me at Badwater. It was great. Even though I saw my crew so much, it was still like, when is the next checkpoint? Okay, that's like 23 miles. I could do 23 more miles right now at this pace with these climbs and stuff. So, and we broke all of that down with the elevation and stuff. My husband he's good at all that stuff and helps me like with, you know, if you average this, you know, on the ascents, you know, and, you know, so he'll break all that down for me and kind of keep me on track. And so we'll see how that works for Cocodona.
So at Cocodona, other than kind of have fun, experience it and finish, do you have any competitive goals or any time goals or any expectations in that space?
I would love, I mean, putting it out there, right?
Yep.
Just ask me. I mean, people have asked me, but I think it'd be really cool to get under 70 hours.
That's my goal.
So, let's go.
Let's do it. That's 100. That's been my goal since I finished last year.
What were you last year?
76.
76.
I finished fourth place 2 years in a row, and while I'm really happy and like excited about that, I'm also like, it drives me crazy that I want that podium so bad. And it's just always been like,
oh my gosh, yes,
just out of reach.
Let's get it. That's 70.
Let's do it.
Somewhere in the 60s.
That's right. Yeah. Cool. And I know like, I don't even have to run any fast. It's all logistics. I can get 6 hours on logistics. I know I've looked it over. So it's crazy how, like, I think I spent 12 hours not moving last year.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was one of, like, if you look at other people in the top 10, I was one of, I spent less time than most.
Holy cow. Yeah. I would love to like pick your brain and like just sit down and see how you guys did all those logistics. Cause this is so new.
Yeah. But I love it. That's an awesome goal. That's no joke, has been my goal since like May 5th, 2023, whenever I finished last year.
Okay.
So let's do it.
Let's get it. I love it. It's always good to have somebody, a buddy, you know, because I don't know how, I actually don't know too many people running it. Let's see, we've got Mike McKnight, and I don't know too many people in the ultra world. So that's, now I know you guys. Are you running it as well, Peter, this year?
No, I'm not. Sadly, I'm a little bit injured myself right now. Actually, I was curious about, you know, how you bounce back from foot surgery so quick. Because I have like a stress fracture type thing in my femur. So.
Oh, dang it. Oh, that's bummer. I'm so sorry. With my foot surgery, they actually, I think they put like, it had to have been a good runner, the cadaver tendon that they put in. I made sure, I'm like, it was a good runner, right? No, he was actually just shocked as much as I was that how fast I came back. And, he did put limits on me, but then he also like kind of was like, my doctor, he follows me. He's known me for a lot of years. He understands my obsession, but he also wants what's best for my body in the long run. And so as much as he's like, I can't recommend what you did to other people to go do because the healing was so great, but it's working for you and it's working really well. And the cadaver tendon usually doesn't get blood flow for like a good 6 months to a year. And it's already got blood flow. It's already, you know, so it's, my body just grabbed it and like loved it. So I got really blessed because that injury came out of nowhere from a nasty fall. And I was really devastated that I shouldn't be running yet. So he didn't think I'd be running for 4 to 6 months, and it's not even been 4 months. So I feel really blessed that it's good. I'm like, if I have to cycle for 6 months, that's fine. At least it's something. I had something, but doing all of the things, the cold therapy, the red light therapy, the toga. Yeah, it's a thing.
I have that. Kevin, you have that too. The toe spreader yoga things. Yeah.
Yeah. And like doing the little exercises, lifting your toes. And so I don't know exactly how it happened so quickly. The doctor's in awe. I'm in awe, but I'm going to just take it as a gift, a blessing, because, you know, I can make it without running, but I'm a lot nicer when I can run.
I agree. Yeah. I struggle so much on the mental side, just staying focused when I'm injured and doing, you know, cross training and all the things I should. I don't know how you do it. Yeah. It's so hard.
Yeah. Well, I love cycling. So I was totally open to cycling. Like I thought I'd be cycling still, just cycling right now. So, and I had accepted that, but I had to like try on my running shoes.
And then that felt good. Take a few steps. Yeah.
Yeah. I stayed flat for the first month, like nothing but treadmill. I didn't even go outside because one little trip on that little tendon, that new tendon, it wasn't it. So I tried to stay smart with it. I know that sounds stupid, but I tried to stay as smart as I could with it and kept up with my exercises. And now I feel like it's perfect. So it doesn't get swollen. Like even my 100 over the weekend, there's zero swelling in my ankle. My 100 in December, there was zero swelling. So I feel like she's good now.
Awesome. So with Cocodona coming up in, geez, it's only 10, 11 weeks. It's scary no, to, not. Yeah, I think it is. It's scary to verbalize it that way. Actually, we should end. I got to go out and run. like right now. Will you get out to the course at all and see any sections before race day, or will it all be a surprise?
You know, I would love to, and it's in the plans, but I've got so many plans that I've got a big old project with iFit that we're hitting, and I've got to nail down. So if I would love to make it work, but I'm just right now, I don't know. So family and work. So if I could get those miles and it's a surprise, then hey, one more bonus, you know, little surprise, like what's around that corner. So what about you? Do you get out there before, even though you've done it?
I'm tempted to go to the official training run again. Like they do, I think it's the first weekend in April. They do the first 37 miles.
No way.
Yeah. You can sign up on Ultra Sign Up, or just contact the race director, Steve. So they like bus you either to the start or back from the finish. They have both options. And they kind of support you through the first 37 miles. I'd done that before last year and then obviously have run it during the race. But this year I have 4 athletes who I coach running it, and they're doing the training day. So I feel like I want to be out there, but I just kind of like you, I just don't know if it fits in my puzzle of a year yet. And I mean, there's certainly, you know, the pros to getting out there and seeing it are obvious, but you know, you'll be prepared regardless. I think people actually put too much stock in that first 37 miles, and they overtrain for it because it's scary when, you know,
all the climbing.
Yeah. The majority of the race is beyond that. And they forget about that sometimes. So maybe yeah. It'd be good to not see it.
Yeah. No, I would love to get out there just cause it's time, but it's, also, the first of April, is that when it is?
It's usually the first weekend in April. I forget what the actual date is, but yeah.
I love that they do that for people, though. That's great. That's a pretty good perk right there. So, but yeah, I'll look into it and see if it can happen. I know Mike McKnight is going out a couple times. And he's invited me, and so I'm like, okay, let me know the week before, and I will see what the schedule looks like, because that's how my life rolls. I rarely know what I'm doing next week. So, just more time on the trails, really, whether it's the course or not, is going to be beneficial for me at this point, because I'm such a roadie and a tready girl right now. So I need some dirt underneath my feet.
All right. Let's jump into our quick 5 questions, which is how we usually kind of wrap these things up. So these are kind of like first thing that come to mind, like, you know, relatively quick answers. It doesn't have to be, you could change your mind later because it's hard to pinpoint sometimes, but I'll kick it off with, and it could be any race you've ever done. It doesn't have to necessarily be an ultra run. But what's the highest high you've ever had in a race?
Oh, the Olympic trials marathon, was definitely, my body just ticked so great and felt amazing. So marathon for that one. That was in Atlanta, Georgia, back in 2020.
All right. Lowest low in a race.
those dang Biffy bags at Badwater 135. When I can't squat anymore and use my own legs to help me squat down, and I've got my best friends on each side and my husband holding the Biffy bag behind me, is definitely a low moment. And I wanted to cry, but needs to be done. So definitely those were one of my lowest lows, is those Biffy bag moments at Badwater.
At least at Cocodona, you can usually find like a tree or a rock to lean on or something like that.
I didn't even think about that until just talking about Biffy bags. I'm like, am I going to have to use Biffy bags again? Oh yes. Hallelujah. Cause that's seriously like, I get PTSD thinking about it. It's horrible.
What about, if you had to pick one food, like favorite food for racing, if you had to do one food for 250 miles, let's say, you don't have to, but if you did.
Cheetos.
Nice.
Cheetos all the way.
All right. Favorite piece of gear for an ultra?
Food. Is that gear? Favorite piece of gear, for an ultra? Well, it's gotta be... like shoes? Is that what you're talking about? Like gear is in like what pack you use or what?
Could be anything.
Like if you were going to get like a generic set of gear, like someone else was picking out all your stuff for you for Cocodona, but you got to choose one brand or things in specific, which would the thing that you choose, you know, what would you choose?
Have to be my pack. I need to make sure that pack is going to be able to hold my food and fit me right. Cause you know, you can't just go with any pack. So I like that extra small Ultra Spire pack.
Nice. Yeah. And that like pack is so uncomfortable on day one of Cocodona. Like you have to carry so much water. Like they ad nauseum will tell you like, you know, you need this much, you need this much. Don't even for the front of the pack. Don't like, you know, take those warnings seriously. After that, it gets a lot easier. But the first 37 is like, you need to be a mule.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Good yeah. to know. Man.
All right, final question we got for you. We know the answer, you know the answer, but we have to ask it because that is the theme of this podcast. Ashley, have you found your distance to empty yet?
No, I have not. I'm going to keep going. Yeah. I've always got a little bit more in that tank, always.
That's right, we'll keep looking. Ashley, thank you so much for joining us. Really stoked to meet you out at Cocodona and hopefully do some racing together.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks so much for having me, you guys. It was great chatting with you and getting to know you, and you guys filling me in a little bit on the course. So hopefully we can have more conversations because I need it.
That was an awesome chat with Ashley. I'm going to try something new here before we dive into sort of our post-show outro and ask you guys a little bit earlier just to give us a review if you haven't already. It really helps the show grow and lets us continue doing this and bring it to more people. So just wanted to make that call out. Takes just a couple of seconds. Head over to Spotify or Apple or wherever you're listening and just give us a review. Write down a few things that you like or dislike about the show. And you know, we really do enjoy receiving those and reading those. So we'd greatly appreciate that. If you don't already, give us a follow, subscribe, all that good stuff. So, yeah, but man, that was so fun chatting with Ashley. It's pretty cool that we have the same same finish time goal. So I'm hoping I get to share some miles with her.
Yeah, definitely. That was a fun chat. I guess for me, it's the first time I've been in the position to be offering advice to such an accomplished athlete. So that was fun. You can really tell how different these 200 plus races are, you know, based on just the questions and you know, it really is a different type of event altogether. So I'm really excited to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see it, see how it goes for her, and maybe we'll have her back on and see what she learned.
Sounds great. All right, should we get into some categories?
Yeah, let's do it. You want to kick us off with the Peter's Performance of the Week?
Yep, I will do Performance of the Week. So this week we are giving it to Scott Imlay. So Scott is an athlete I've met several times. He just finished the Grandmasters Ultra's 100-mile distance, and he has several 200-plus mile distances on the calendar. So looks like he's off to the start of a great year. So kudos to Scott.
Awesome. Yeah, I met Scott a couple of times as well. I think I'm pretty sure it was Scott. It's hard to remember at mile 177 of a race, but I think at mile 177 of Bigfoot one year, he was volunteering at the aid station and like made sure I got like M&M pancakes or something. I think I remember him taking care of me. So hopefully I have that right. And thank you, Scott, if that was you. I'm like 99% sure it was, but it seems like another lifetime ago.
Yeah, he's great. He does a lot of volunteering in these races. I know he's done a bunch of course marking and things of that nature. So thank you for all you do out there. It takes a lot of volunteers to make these races happen.
So let's get to our snack review. So for those of you who might not know, Peter and I placed an order with Galactic Snacks, which like sends you snacks from all around the world. And we've been kind of like reviewing them as if they were aid station foods. So I think it's actually probably time to place another order with either the same company or something new. I'm getting low on my snacks. But we picked, we each have a different version of Cheetos today, which is fitting because Ashley said her favorite race food is Cheetos. So I'll start. I have a bag of Cheetos, which appears to be from Belgium, and they are like soccer balls. They're called Cheeto Goals, and they're little soccer balls, and the flavor appears to just be cheese. But there's definitely something weird going on. Maybe there's some like bacon flavor in there or something. I can't quite tell. They're good, but not better than regular Cheetos, in my opinion. Like I'm going to eat them, but they're kind of a little bland. So I guess they might work well for a race. But yeah, that's my Cheeto Goals review.
And I have Cheetos from what looks like Korea. I can't read any of it, but there's a picture of some meat grilling on a barbecue on the cover. So I think it's some sort of barbecued meat. And some of the ingredients are in English. It just says chicken as an ingredient. So I guess it's a barbecued chicken Cheeto. And I think they taste okay, but it doesn't seem like a Cheeto to me. It's more dense and it's not cheesy at all. It's really, really savory. So I could definitely eat these. Wouldn't be my first choice, but it's okay. I'll give it just okay.
Okay, maybe we should get like a 1 out of 10 ranking for our foods. Like I'd give these Cheetos a 5.
Yeah, probably about the same on these, a 5.
Yeah. Cool. Let's shift over to, let's do a course corner. I wanna hit you with a Tahoe 200 course section and see what you thought about it. So I was talking with one of my athletes this morning, and you know, I think one of the nice things about Tahoe compared to some of the other races is it's kind of like consistent. Like you can almost expect like each section to be like 15 miles plus or minus 2 or 3 and like 3,000 feet of up and down plus or minus 1,000, something like that. Whereas you get much bigger swings in the other races, right? So I was telling him that, and there's of course a few outliers. So One of the outliers is the section from Village Green to Brockway Summit, which is home to the infamous power line climb at Tahoe. So Peter, what are your memories from that section? Kind of walk us through what you thought of it.
Sure. Yeah, I have a unique perspective on Tahoe because I've paced about 70 miles of it. So I actually showed up to the race not really knowing what to expect. And this was an enjoyable section for me. You know, we just come from Spooner, spent a lot of time way high in altitude, 9,000 plus feet. So this is really the first time that you're kind of back to the lake. So I had never been to Incline Village before, and you get to spend, 3 or 4 miles just on a bike path, getting the royal tour of Incline Village. So it was fun just to see all the wild houses. I think it's a pretty affluent area of Nevada. So just made it through that section. I think it's just a big change of pace from what you've been experiencing so far. And then you get up into the neighborhood and out of it, and then you hit Powerline. So I know Powerline has a reputation in this race. My take is it's steep, but it's over quickly. A lot of switchbacks, it is steep though. It's like that 1,000 feet per mile gain. We actually hit it in the heat. So that part of it wasn't so enjoyable, but we definitely powered to the top. Didn't take that long. And then you're met with some amazing views from the top. So you can turn around and see a great view of the lake, and it's almost the other side of the lake, you see where you've been. So it's a great moment to kind of just reflect on the journey you've been on. And then it's pretty, for the rest of the way too. I remember going through like this meadow area with a lot of greenery, and then, descending down to the aid station, nothing crazy. It seemed like a buttery single track trail to the aid station. So good section.
Yeah. Once you top out, it is pretty nice up there. And I had a similar experience where it was like really cool to just see the houses. Like they're like, I don't know how many million-dollar mansions along the lake there. And like, I passed through early in the morning, and I remember like a guy coming out in his robe with his coffee to like get the newspaper. And it's just like the juxtaposition of like the such an affluent, like normal person living that sort of life, stepping outside, and then like me, essentially a homeless person, like, have been on the trail for days, smelly jackets and clothing hanging off of me. And like, it was a funny juxtaposition between me and him. And, you said good morning, he said good morning back. And it was just funny. But yeah, that's a cool section.
All right. So what's next?
What's next.
Is it time to get deep?
It's time to play Let's Get Deep. Let's Get Deep is a card game for couples. Peter and I, if you're not looking too deep into it, then we're a couple of sorts. So we play this game on the podcast. So it consists of three different categories: icebreaker, deep, and deeper. And we'll take turns asking each other those questions. So Peter, I'll kick it off with an icebreaker. What fictional character do you relate to the most, and why?
Fictional character. My mind goes straight to Star Wars because I'm a bit of a nerd. I'm trying to think. Maybe I'll just go Han Solo. I think I'm a bit of a rebel. I don't always like to follow the rules, and and I think I like to go on journeys and set my own course. So that's Han Solo.
Yeah, that's a cool choice.
All right, icebreaker for you. Would you ever switch to being vegetarian or vegan?
No, but not on principle or anything. Like I actually think it would be cool. I have nothing against it. I just am such a picky eater, and I don't really do many vegetables in my day-to-day life. So it would severely limit my options. So I'm going to say no, but mostly just because I eat like a toddler, not because like I have anything against the lifestyle or I would almost like to if I thought I could, but I don't think I can.
I thought you might say so. I had to ask.
Yeah. All right. Deep for you. What is your favorite thing to do after a tough day?
After a tough day, I like to read, and I like to hang out in my hot tub. So yeah, I'd say read in my hot tub.
What about complain to your friends in GroupMe?
Well, yeah, that's part of it too. A good amount of complaining about all the atrocities that happened to me during the day. But after that, then I'll switch to reading.
Okay.
Okay. Deep for you. What is the best purchase you've ever made and why?
Oh boy. I am, much to my wife's chagrin, I'm an impulse buyer, impulse shopper. The best purchase I've ever made and why? Probably when I went to New Zealand in February of 2019, I think. And I bought a fly rod while I was there. Like, I really like fly fishing. That's kind of like the yin to my yang, like the relaxing passion that I have. And like, fly rods are expensive. It was like $1,000, I think. It was in New Zealand dollars, so I don't remember how much it actually was. But yeah, I bought the fly rod there because I had like a more of a basic fly rod set up at home. And I was like, this is a nice fly rod. It seems like a good deal and I'm going to fish here. So I just went for it. And it's still the fly rod I use today, which it's only been 5 years, so it doesn't sound like much. But again, I'm an impulse. Like, I'm always looking for like the next best piece of gear. So the fact that I like, it's still my primary fly rod to this day shows that, I made a good purchase and it's a good tool that I use a lot. All right, deeper for you. This one's tough. We can cut it down to not three if you can't think of anything. But what three words would you use to describe us both? We're both blank.
We're both funny.
Definitely.
I think we're both really positive.
Not so much me.
No, I think we are. I think that's why we work well together, is like whenever we go on adventures, we're always both just down for whatever it is, and we keep it positive. Third thing, I think we're both focused. Yeah, we're really funny. We joke around a lot, stay positive, like I said, but also focused. I think we both set goals for ourselves and do what we can to go after them.
Yeah, I like it. Funny, positive, and focused.
Okay. And then deeper for you, what is the most spontaneous thing you've ever done?
So just talking about that trip to New Zealand, I forget where Melanie was when I booked that, but she wasn't like home. She was like on a work trip in a different country or something. And I like woke her up, like telling her I booked flights to New Zealand. And I booked those flights. Like, I had woken up. I remember this vividly. I'd woken up to go to the bathroom one night. And so, like, I always check my phone when I wake up in the middle of the night. Terrible habit. But in this case, I saw, like, an email that was, like, flash sale for flights to New Zealand. And I booked flights to New Zealand at, like, 4 in the morning during the night bathroom trip. And then texted Melanie, like, hey, we're going to New Zealand in February. It was a great trip.
That's awesome. Yeah. I like this question. Just, I think I did Avalon 50 miler on a Saturday, got permission to go to Hurt. And I think I booked plane tickets the next morning for a flight that like left Wednesday or something, cause Hurt was the next weekend. So that was fun. It's fun to be spontaneous.
I'm going to do it. I almost texted you and Francis and was like, we got to go back to Hawaii just for, not even for Hurt, just for like a threesome trip.
Sounds good. We'll stay at the same hotel.
Yeah, we can send, we'll send Gabe Peterson the bill. I'm sure he wouldn't mind.
Sounds good.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. I won't badger you again with a like and subscribe and review. We took care of that at the top of this. Hope you enjoyed our chat with Ashley. Follow along as she aims to crush Coca Donut, and we'll see you next time on Distance to Empty. Thanks.